Guys, Parshas Chukas and Balak happens to be, Balak is by far my favorite Parsha that I've ever seen before in my life, because it's all about magics. But we have to have Chukas beforehand. You got to say some stuff on Chukas beforehand. So the first thing is, Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe ve'al Aaron lemor, zos Chukas haTorah sheTzivah Hashem lemor, dabro b'nei Yisrael v'yichu eilecha para aduma tamima she'ein ba mumah she'lo ala aleha ol. So you got to speak to b'nei Yisrael and take yourselves a para aduma. So the red cow, the red heifer, right? And that's the best thing. When you look in the green art scroll on the side of the page, you see that red heifer, the destruction of the red heifer and the ashes of the red heifer. There's no better word than heifer. But either way, what the Mizrahi asked the famous question, because Rashi quotes down over here, it's Chukas HaTorah, that Lefisha Satan ve'umos olam monin es Yisrael, because the Satan and all the nations of the world, they start oppressing Bnei Yisrael. Lomar ma mitzvah zos, ma tamish, but what's this mitzvah? What's the reason for it? Lefika kasub ha'chuka, gzeri hi melafanai, ein lach rishus lahar achara. The fact is, this is a chok, it's a gzera in front of me, you have no rishus to think about it. I don't want you to start thinking about it, or start saying things, or whatever it is. I don't want you to start thinking about anything else. Now, in other words, that means that there's no reason for it whatsoever. The problem is that Zos Chukas HaTorah, we know the Paraduma has something to do with the Egel Azov. That the Bnei Yisrael were over on the Egel Azov, they worshipped the Egel Azov, they had the little cow, so we give them a big cow. And that big cow is the Paraduma. And the Paraduma is supposed to be a tikkun, it's supposed to be fixing up for everything they did with the Egel Azov. So what do you mean it's a chok? It doesn't have any reason behind it. There's a good reason behind it. We're trying to get rid of all the problems of the Egel Azov that we had done before. So what does Rashi mean that it's a chok? The truth is that what the Goyim are saying to us, they're trying to accuse us of doing one thing, and that is, they think that we would only do mitzvos if we understand the mitzvos that we're doing. If we understand what we're doing, we understand why we're doing it, that's the only reason why we'll do mitzvos. But if it doesn't make any sense, if for some reason the mitzvah that we're given doesn't make any sense and we don't understand it, then we wouldn't do it. Let me give you a classic example. The Akedah. Avraham Avinu is going around for over 137 years telling people, guys, you can't do child sacrifice, you can't sacrifice other people, you can't hurt other people, God doesn't want that. God comes to him in a dream and says to him, sacrifice your kid. What's the first thing that's going to come into your head? It's 137 years of pure hypocrisy. 137 years of pure hypocrisy of everything that you thought was true within God, and now God comes and tells you, I want you to go ahead and do this. So what are you going to say? The first thing you're going to ask is, what the heck have I been worshipping for the past 137 years? If this is the religion that I'm doing, like, why in the world did you ask me to do this? But what did Avram do? He didn't ask any questions. He just went ahead with it and said, okay, fine. He went ahead and did something, even though it didn't make any sense to him whatsoever. So that means, or that's what the Satan's trying to get us on. The Satan tries to get us from then on. Are we going to do mitzvos because we understand them, and therefore we're not like Avram Avinu? Are we going to do mitzvos even if we don't understand them, because Hashem told us to go ahead and do it, even though we don't understand it whatsoever? These ashes don't make any sense whatsoever. It's mitami, the person who's sprinkling them. It's mitami, the person who gathers them and burns it. It's mitahir, the person that it's sprinkled upon. That makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. Where's the connection between being mitami, the person who uses it, but being mitahir, the person who gets it? It doesn't make any sense. But the fact is, we do it anyway. Why? Not because there's a reason behind it, because, look, God told us to do this. So if God told us to do it, how could you argue? How could you say, absolutely not, I'm not going to do it? So, if that's true, it's true by every single mitzvah in the entire Torah. Why do we keep Pesach? Come on, somebody tell me. Why do we keep Pesach? Because Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim. It's dead wrong. Can't be. Can't be, because Yitzchak kept Pesach. It's a Pirkei de Rabbi Elazar that Yitzchak had Pesach. And that's the whole thing with Esav and the Brachos and Esav and Yaakov. And Yaakov was bringing them the two, Korban Chagiga and the Korban Pesach. Yitzchak was able to keep it. Why would he keep Pesach if they never left Mitzrayim yet? Because God told him to keep it. So why would God tell him to keep Pesach if there's no reason for Pesach yet? It can't be that Pesach is because we left Mitzrayim, because otherwise you would have no reason to keep Pesach before we left Mitzrayim. But they did. And not only that, the night of Pesach they kept Pesach. Before they left Mitzrayim. Why did they eat the Korban Pesach? You can't say because we left. They didn't leave yet. What if God would have said the next morning, they would have been like, April Fool's, guys. I'm sorry, but I didn't mean it. You're staying here. I don't want you to move. They still would have eaten the Korban Pesach. They didn't leave yet. There was nothing to do with the leaving. So why do we keep Pesach? So you think that there's a reason behind the Torah. There's no reason behind these things. They're all chukim. They're all gezeras from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We can sometimes attribute a reason for it. Sometimes we'll be able to look at something and say, well, some of the reason is like this. I can figure out a reason like that. Maybe once in a while you'll be able to figure something out. But the point is, mitzvos are all chukim. We cannot understand them. There's no reason to give a reason to it. And therefore, even if you gave a reason to it and the reason falls off, we still keep the mitzvah. You don't throw away the mitzvah just because the reason went out.
Do you think the beginning of is coming to exclude something?
Zos chukas haTorah, but the fact is, even if that were true, even if zos were true, still there are other chukos in the Torah. You know what I'm saying? Like shatness. Why does shatness make any sense? You have other things in the Torah that don't make any sense. So why would it only be this zechok and not as opposed to anything else? You're right, though, in the fact that we learn, and this is the time of Minhagim. The time of Minhagim says we learn the fact that a chok means mitzvah without reason from this parsha of Paradum. And that's what it means by zos chukas haTorah. That here is the essence. This is the source for all chukos that are in the Torah. But that's it. But don't go around saying that the whole idea behind the Paradum is a kapara for the Egel Azov. It might be true, but the fact is, who cares? You keep mitzvos anyway. It doesn't make a difference why. The fact is, this is true. This is true. This is a mitzvah. And it doesn't make a difference why. We do it anyway. Proof. The proof is, this is quoted down by the Chanukah Satorah. Chanukah Satorah says, when was Paraduma given to Bnei Yisrael? It wasn't given now. It was given before. When was it given? Shom, Sam, Lo, Chok, Umishpat, Visham, Nisahu. Before Matan Torah, when they were in Mara, they had the line, Shom, Sam, Lo, there they were given. Chok, Umishpat, a din of a Chok, and a mishpat v'sham nisa when they were tested. The chok was paraduma. They got that before Matan Torah. That means before the Egel Azov, they still had this concept of paraduma. But if the Egel Azov wasn't there, then why would they have the paraduma? There's no kapara for the Egel Azov. The fact is, it's not a kapara for the Egel Azov. That's the fact. That's what we're supposed to do. Likute Yoshua says a very easy midah k'neged midah. Think about this. They said by the Egel Azov, Me yadanu, lo yadanu mehayelo. We don't know what happened to Moshe Rabbeinu. So Hashem said, what they're going to get instead of that is a paraduma, in which they won't know the reason behind it. They said, we don't know what happened to Moshe. So Hashem says, okay, then you're not going to know the reason behind this. And the only person who's ever going to know is Moshe. Because Moshe is the only one who knew where he was. He knew where he was, nobody else did. So that's the difference between them over anything else. Okay, we're not going to go into it. The Miyam Lois says that there's a whole concept of the Tumah. How can you explain to me what Tumah is? Can you tell me what Tumah is? Rabbi Hartman in Base, first year Rebbe in Base, said the best answer to this, he said from his kid, said he's asked this question to Gedolim, he's asked the question to hundreds of people. So the best answer he ever heard was from his four-year-old son. He came home and started speaking about Tameh and Tahor and all these things. Started speaking about it when he came, you know, came back from camp one day. Started speaking about it right here in this week's Parsha. So Rabbi Hartman asked him, Nu, tell me, what is Tameh? What is Tumah? What does it mean, Tameh? So everybody says, impure. So I was asking all these kids today, I was trying to see if they would get, you know, in camp, I was trying to see what they would say. So they all said, every single one said, impure. Impure. Everybody said that. What does impure mean? What does pure mean? How do you become impure? What does that mean? So the kid sat there, four-year-old kid, sat there and said, I don't know, and he was Israeli, so I don't know what this is, Tameh. I know how you become Tameh. It's truth. We have no idea what Tumah is. There is no concept of Tumah. It's just, the fact is, we know what makes you Tameh. But you can't say, you can't look at a guy and be like, that guy's Tameh, and that guy's Torah, and that guy's Tameh, and that guy's Torah. It's impossible to do. The fact is, there's a concept of Tameh. We don't know what that leads into, and that's it. Okay. Miriam. Miriam passes away. So I had this thing where I was writing letters to Gedolim one time. So I wrote to Rav Chaim Knievsky. And the question that I asked him was, you know, son of the stipler in Bnei Brak. I wrote to him and I said, we know why Moshe and Aaron didn't go into Eretz Yisrael. Why didn't they go into Eretz Yisrael? Because of Mei Meriva. Because the whole thing was hitting the rock, right? Which we're not going to get into today, the reasons behind it. That's just too much. But they hit the rock. So I asked, what about Miriam? Why didn't Miriam go into Eretz Yisrael? I know why she died. Fine, she died as a kapara, whatever it is. Rashi says the whole reason. But why did she not merit to see and be buried in Eretz Yisrael? Easy question, right? What's the answer? So Chaim Knievsky said, Yesh b'midrash tam lazeh. Yesh b'midrash tam lazeh. So you got to check out the midrashim. So that doesn't help much, especially when you don't give a specific Maran Malkom. So I went to Rishmol Orbach. Rishmol Orbach, the son of Rishmol Zalman Orbach. So I asked him. Rishmol Orbach told me, he pulled out a midrash rabbi, he said, flipping through. After like 5 minutes, he said, I don't know. So I asked it to one other Gadol, nobody that I hear that I think anybody knows, Rav Kirschenbaum in remote Poland. And he again told me, there's no reason for it. It doesn't say anywhere. So I finally found a reason for it. And it so fits in with the entire Parsha. You sit there and you realize, you're just like, oh my gosh, this is crazy. It fits in so perfectly, you go crazy once you hear it. Chassam Sofer says the following. Says, what was the problem with Miriam? What is the only thing that we know she did wrong in the entire Torah? We know that she spoke Lashon Hara, right? There's a Gemara that says Lashon Hara kills the one who says it, the one who hears it, and the one who accepts it. Three people die. The one who says it, the one who hears it, and the one who accepts it. Miriam spoke, Aaron heard it, Moshe Rabbeinu was the guy they spoke about. Those were the three people involved. All three of them were going to end up having to die. But because all of them had good intentions, Miriam didn't mean to slander Moshe Rabbeinu. She had no idea that she was even speaking Lashon Hara. Because of that, they all have a chance for a tikkun. They all have a chance to get themselves back. So you know what the tikkun was for Miriam? What happens right after Parshas Miriam? After Miriam speaks Lashon Hara, what Parsha comes right after that? The end of Baloska, what happens? Beginning of Shlach. And what's in the beginning of Shlach? Meraglim. What did the Meraglim do? They spoke Lashon Hara. Says Rashi, they didn't learn from Miriam. Such a crazy pshat. Shlach lecha anashim. Send for yourself, men. Everybody asked the question. Moshe Rabbeinu knew that the Meraglim were going to screw up. He knew they were going to mess up. He knew they were never going to speak clearly. They weren't going to do the right thing in Eretz Yisrael. He knew what was going to happen. Why did he send them? God came up to him and said, I'm telling you, Moshe, don't send them. If you send them, bad things are going to happen. But if you do, you can go. If you want to go for yourself, you can go ahead and do it for yourself. What does that mean for yourself? Why would he do it for himself? If God told me not to, I wouldn't do it. I'm not going to do it. Why all of a sudden, because he said, Shlach Lecha, if you really want to, you can, then Moshe Rabbeinu said, okay, I'm going to do it. What made him decide? Such an easy answer now. Because Miriam needed a kapara. She was going to die unless through her Lashon Hara, she taught other people a lesson. Other people learned. They saw what happened to Miriam. She spoke Lashon Hara and she got punished. I'm not going to speak Lashon Hara because if I speak Lashon Hara, what's going to happen to me? I'm going to get punished. If they would have learned the lesson from Miriam, then she would have gotten a tikkun, she would have lived, and she would have gone into Eretz Yisrael, and everything would have been fine. So Moshe Rabbeinu had to send the Meraglim. He had to go with that one little chance that he had that Miriam was going to get a tikkun and a kapara. Hashem said it's not going to happen. Why? Because avera gereres avera. One avera leads to another. If Miriam did an avera, that avera is going to lead to another avera by the Meraglim. But there's a chance. There is a 1% chance. So Moshe Rabbeinu pulled out all his strings. He pulled in the Shvatim. He got the Neshamos of all the Shvatim. And he pulled them in and he put them in every single one of the Meraglim. He put Ruvain and Elitzur ben Shteir. He put Shimon in, etc. And he went in. He put the Neshamos of every Shevet in every single one of them. He added on a letter of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name, the Yoshua. He told Kalib to go to Hebron, to go daven on the Kibrei HaAvos, to ask the Avos to help them out. He pulled out everything he could in order to save Miriam, to get make that Dibor, the Dibor that she spoke, to get a Tikkun for it. He did everything he could. Still, what happened? They failed.
Why didn't
you? That was the pshat of Miriam. Miriam is still a kapara for all of Bnei Yisrael. It's true that she was, she was only one person, but she was a kapara for all of Bnei Yisrael. If Miriam's alive, she'll cause more good than the bad that's going to be caused by the Meraglim. It's better for Bnei Yisrael to have Miriam alive and going into Eretz Yisrael than to have her dead and Bnei Yisrael not to go in immediately.
Why does the person
Hold on. That's another thing. That's in the Gemara itself. We're not going to go into that yet. But Miriam, because of that, it's in Nidaren. That Miriam, because of that, had to die. She lost out because of Meraglim, she died. Now, Moshe and Aaron had one last chance. And that one last chance is in this week's Parsha. When Miriam dies, what happens? The water stops. All the water was coming out from this massive rock of Miriam, and all of a sudden the water stops. So Hashem says to Moshe Rabbeinu, Moshe, you can still get a tikkun on your dibor. The dibor that was spoken about you, and Aaron was involved, Aaron and you have a gezeira of misa upon you. You can still get a tikkun by doing what? By speaking to the rock and showing people how powerful dibor is, that Debor can make water come out of rocks. And if they see that Debor can make water come out of rocks, maybe they'll learn from that and they'll do a tremendous thing. They'll make a Kal Vachomer and they'll say to themselves, wow, look how powerful Debor is. I better not speak any Lashon Hara for the rest of my life. They didn't learn from Miriam. Now it's a chance for them to learn from you. So Moshe and Aaron had this chance to improve upon themselves, to do it by themselves, to bring this Debor, speak to the rock, and make it go out to Bnei Yisrael. Moshe Rabbeinu said to himself, but what if they don't do the Kal Vachomer? What if they don't make the Kal Vachomer? Then there's going to be a Kitrug, there's going to be a massive accusation against Klal Yisrael, that Bnei Yisrael are going to be blamed for my death, because they didn't learn from me. They didn't learn from the Kal Vachomer. So instead of speaking to the rock, what did he do? Hit the rock while speaking to the rock. He still said, Amin Aselaz and Notzi Lachamayim, he still spoke, but he's hit the rock while speaking to the rock, so that Bnei Yisrael would see that there has to be a hit with the Debor. And thus Moshe Rabbeinu lost his own life. He had to be hit, and Aaron also, for not giving a Musar, not telling him not to do this. He got hit, and then the Debor, they were able to go inside Eretz Yisrael. It was a massive, Moshe Rabbeinu was willing to give up his entire life, to give up everything, because what if Bnei Yisrael weren't going to learn the lesson like by the Meraglim? He was worried that they would be killed because of him, because they wouldn't learn. The lesson was supposed to learn. If you use Debor, Debor is powerful. Debor can stop things. It can make water flow. It can do 100%. It can do crazy things. So don't speak Lashon Hara. That should have been the lesson they would have learned. But Moshe Rabbeinu knew these people never learn lessons. They don't get it. And if they don't get it, I'm gonna mess them over. I'll be able to go into Eretz Yisrael, but there's going to be a huge plague on Bnei Yisrael. It's because of that he was willing to let himself be killed instead of that happening. There's a whole big thing about Morim. Shimuna HaMorim, he said, Shimuna HaMorim, listen, O rebellious ones. Morim is the same letters as Miriam. There's a shame of Hashem that was known as Miriam. And Moshe Rabbeinu just turned it around and turned it into Morim. There's a whole big thing, because the difference between the trup, if you use the nekudos of Morim and the nekudos of Miriam, and you go into how much nekudos are, like dots are considered like 10, because it's like a yud. Lines are considered like a vav, they're like 6, and you count them all up. Morim is 26 more than Miriam. There's a whole big thing on that, but we're not going to go into that right now. All right, Og. Everyone knows about Og, right? Everyone knows this crazy big guy, Og. It's this massively crazy guy, 720 amos tall, huge crazy guy, according to some of the Midrashim, because if you go, he's Moshe Rabbeinu, who jumps up 10 amos, and he's 10 amos tall, and he's got a spear that's 10 amos, and he hits him in the ankle. You know, so he's 30 amos up until the ankle. You can imagine the rest of his body, he's like 720 amos tall. This is a crazy, crazy tall guy. His bed was only 9x4, that was a crib when he was a little baby. But that is part of the question. There's another thing. The Miamloway says he was 38 amos to the waist. 38 amos to the waist. So if he's 38 amos to the waist and he's 720 amos tall, that's the biggest freak I've ever seen before in my life. That doesn't make any sense. He's like all torso and he's got these tiny little legs, you know? It's like a Tyrannosaurus Rex walking on its little hands, you know? That's all it is. It just doesn't make any sense. How does that make any sense? So what's the chop behind Og? So this is mine. I don't know if it's true or not, but I've told it over to quite a few people, and a lot of people said there's a little bit of MS behind it. So that's another thing. Moshe Rabbeinu goes up and he takes the sword. Where does he hit him? In the ankle. And all of a sudden, Og is dead. He's gone. He falls down. He's just like, oh, he's gone. The Achilles heel, right? Everybody says, oh, the Achilles, right? But he didn't hit him in the Achilles. He hit him in the ankle. Why in the world did Og die from a hit in the ankle? Why did he hit him in the ankle? And number two, why was Moshe so afraid? At the end of the parsha, Rashi says that Moshe Rabbeinu was afraid. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu tell him, Al tira oso, don't be afraid of him. Don't worry, nothing's going to happen. Why was he afraid of him? What was there to be worried about? What did Og do that was so great that Moshe Rabbeinu was honestly afraid of Og? What was there to be afraid of? What did he do?
Sheer size.
Sheer size, size. But Moshe Rabbeinu is also a big guy, you know? Og did one big thing. There's a Midrash, there's a Yalkut Shimoni in Parshas Chayesara. Eliezer Eved Avram. Eliezer Eved Avram. It's Yalkut Shimoni in Parshas Chayesara says, Eliezer Eved Avram, when he came back after he brought Rivka to Yitzchak, Yitzchak checked her, meaning he was with her, and figured out that she wasn't a Besula. She was a Ba'ula. Somebody had had Bia with her before. And he realized, he ran to Eliezer and said, what happened to her? How could you have done this to me? How come she's not a Besula? And he suspected Eliezer of doing something wrong. Eliezer said, it wasn't me. Maybe when she fell off the camel, because when she saw you, she fell off a camel. She's a little kid. Falling off a camel is not an easy thing. These camels are huge. So she fell off the camel. Maybe she lost her blood there. Maybe she fell down on the ground. She hit something, and she lost her besulin there. So they went back to the place, and they saw that these animals were covering up the blood. They saw the blood was there. So says the Yalkut Shimoni, Yitzchak gave him a bracha, and either one of two different things happened. Either Eliezer of Avram entered Gan Eden alive, that's number one, or he became Og Melech HaBashan. He was rewarded in this world, became a king, and became Og Melech HaBashan. Eliezer Eved Avram, the man who was the slave of Avram Avinu, was Og Melech HaBashan. Og had a tremendous chus. He was Eliezer. The guy was not just this huge Russia. He was a tzaddik gummer when he was with Avram Avinu. And Moshe Rabbeinu was honestly worried about that. How do I know that Avram Avinu is going to be on our side? Maybe he's going to be on Og's side. How do I know? He's around by Noah. So there are machlokes midrashim. Because we've got to know, how did he come around? Did he come from Shamchaz and Azol, the two giants that we're going to speak about, by Bilam? Or is he Mamish, the son of Nimrod? Because Eliezer of Avram was supposed to be the son of Nimrod. Massive machlokes in midrashim. And it goes with these two machlokes, and there are lishitasos that go all the way around. What? Yeah, Eliezer was from Canaan because he was Nimrod, the son of Nimrod. It was a whole big thing. But, it's a tremendous thing. Listen to this. What is the Oso? Altira Oso. Don't be afraid of Oso. Don't be afraid of him. Such a crazy guy. What did Eliezer Eved Avram have? What did Avram say? I want you to grab something to promise me that you're not going to come back. He grabbed onto the bris of Avram Avinu. Eliezer Eved Avram had a bris of Avram Avinu. What Moshe Rabbeinu was really afraid of is Oso, his Os. The Os that he had, which was the bris mila that he had on his aver, that he had from Avram Avinu. That's a tremendous chus. So Moshe Rabbeinu said, how am I supposed to do it? So Kadosh Baruch Hu told him, Al tiro so, don't be afraid of him at the end of this week's parsha. Ki biyadcha nasati oso, in your hands I will give his os. Moshe Rabbeinu figured out from there that in order to kill Og, he's going to have to destroy the os. He has to destroy that os. Now, we all say in that Gemara that where Moshe Rabbeinu, when he jumped up and he hit the ankle. Now the thing is, there's a Gemara in Nida, Daf Chafamid Beis, that says, the ankle, don't even look at the ankle of a woman who's in Nida. Don't even look at the ankle of a woman who's in Nida. So that means, like, obviously don't look around there. Says Rashi, we're not talking about the ankle, we're talking about Oso Amakom of the woman, which is right above the ankle. Move yourself up from that angle, from that ankle literally, move yourself straight up, and what do you get to? You get to the erva of the woman. Don't look at the erva of a woman while she's in Nida. That's what the Gemara is saying. The ankle, that's true, but we're saying like that area, even when she's closed, when she has clothes on. We're saying, don't look at the ankle, does not refer to the ankle. The ankle refers to the makom atoref, the erva, which is right opposite that ankle. It's going up from that ankle. By Og, it's the exact same thing. When it says that Moshe Rabbeinu hit the ankle, it's not referring to the ankle, literally. It's referring to the Oso Amakom, which is right there opposite the ankle. What did he hit? He hit the aver. He hit the bris mila of Og. And he castrated him. He took care of it. By taking off the os, the bris mila of Og, Og no longer had the bris, the os that he needed to live. He didn't have the os of Avram Avinu anymore. How far did he jump? 30 amos. The Niam Lui says that up until his waist was 38 amos. 38 amos to his waist. Where was the aver? Where was the os bris? About 30 amos. He jumped exactly to the point where he needed to get to knock off the bris mila of Og, Melech HaBashan. And once he did that, and he learned it from HaKadosh Baruch Hu's words, Ki biyadcha nasati oso, I'm putting his os in your hands, Moshe Rabbeinu. You have to take care of it. And he went ahead and he destroyed Og, and Og was able to be killed. What? Yeah, that's true. That's a whole machlokas. Did Avram Avinu let him touch his own os, or did he touch his own? That's already a machlokas we've shown him. So if you say it's his own, then a mamash wasn't os bris. It wasn't os of his own. Alright, now, this is by far my best. I love, absolutely love this parsha. Balak ben Sipor. Balak ben Sipor is Ben Sipor, right? So first of all, everybody says he's the son of Gerim. Because Sipor, whenever you refer to birds, birds always refer to Gerim, because they fly away. They always fly away and they go somewhere. That's what Gerim are. Gerim fly away from where they were and they go somewhere else entirely. That's what Gerim are supposed to be. Who was Balak the son of? We know the that Balak was not really from Moab. He was the king of Moab. But where was he from? Come on, guys. From Rashi. What does Rashi say? Balak was the king of Moab, but they took him just at that time. But Esahi, he was the king of Moab. Where was he originally? He was from the land of Midian. Guess who he was the son of?
Israel.
Or the grandson. The Arizal says he was the grandson. It says it's Pharisee Yonas and Rabbi Yonas and actually it's the Arizal. He's the son or the grandson of Yisro. He knows, and Yisro, by the way, is the Lashon of Tur. Tur is a dove. All names, Sipora is a bird. All the names of Gerim and Klal Yisrael all refer to birds that they fly into Klal Yisrael. Balak ben Sipor, he was Balak, the son of the Gerim. He was the son of Gerim, and he came around, and he knew Moshe Rabbeinu. He remembered Moshe Rabbeinu, because Moshe Rabbeinu grew up with him. Balak, that's why Balak was chosen to be the king of Moab, because this guy grew up with that guy. So let's get him as king. We'll see. Maybe he knows a fault that Moshe Rabbeinu has. And Balak said, I do know his fault. His fault is that he talks too much. He has a power of Dibor. He has a power of Dibor. So they said, let's find another guy who has a power of Dibor. So they found Balaam. He had a speech impediment. But he had the power of Dibor more than anything else. But others say that the Sipor is something totally different. Everybody's heard of the Yadoah, the famous creature that is attached by its belly button to a pumpkin and attached to the ground, and it looks like a human being. It's got hands and feet and arms, whatever. It looks like a human being all over, but it's very, very dangerous, and the only way to kill it is by shooting at its belly button. You got to shoot at the belly button, you got to shoot at that thing. So this Yadoah, it's called Yadoni. So it's quoted down in Kilayim, in Mishnah's Kilayim, Parachas Mishnah. Yadoni is also known as the Ish Sadeh. That's why Esav was the Ish Yodeh Tzayid Ish Sadeh. He knew how to trap this Ish Sadeh. He knew how to trap this thing. But whatever, either way. What? Similar, whatever. But either way, he shot the arrow, killed him, and Balak took the bone from this Yadoah, and he used certain types of kishuf and magics and ashbos and stuff like that, and he used all this magic and everything, and he created a bird. And that bird, he was able to fly it up to Shemayim and send it over to the Harei Choshech, the mountains of darkness, which we're going to speak about in a second. And if it would go to Harei Choshech, it would go and find out everything that it would needed to know, everything about the future, anything that he needed to know now, and it would come back to him, and he'd be able to look inside its eyes and be able to see everything that he wanted to see. Thus, the beginning of the Parsha, how does Balak start off? Parsha's Balak. How does it start off? Vayar, Balak ben Sipor. Vayar means he saw. Not that he heard, he didn't hear. He saw the war in his bird's eyes. He's able to see it like a crystal ball. He was able to see it through his bird's eyes. Ben Sipor, the guy you used at Sipor. And he's able to get it through all these things. Now, there are certain ways of making it, and the Yalkut Ruvani does go through certain things. You have to have a certain type of metal. You got to use it when the sun is right in the middle of the sky. You got to say a certain hashbah of a certain shade. You got to say a certain shade's name and everything. And if you do it with the Yadoah bone, at that time, you're going to be able to make this massive bird that's able to tell the future and do all these crazy things, that's able to do everything for you. And he was able to send it out. It's not exactly like a phoenix. There are such things, or Zila, the Beyama. There is such a thing as the phoenix, but we're not going to go into that right now. But he was the one who actually saw it. Bilam was also a magician. After the Jews left Mitzrayim, when the Jews left Mitzrayim, the first time they did not cross the Yamsuf yet, when they left Mitzrayim, Bilam got so upset that immediately his own power was the fact that he was able to fly. He could fly himself. He flew himself to the Harei Choshech. So the Miyam Lewis says, it's mutter for me to tell you the following. It's mutter for me to tell you the following, to know how far a person has to delve into in order to be into Tumah. In other words, how far do you have to go in order to be into Tumah and do all these crazy things? It's mutter for me to tell you, but otherwise it'd be usher because it's mamish pure Avodah Zarah. Bilam, after he left Mitzrayim, he flew up and went into the mountains of Choshech. These mountains of Choshech, which is right by the river of Sambatyam, which separates us from the 10 tribes, if you go up there, it's pure black. Absolute blackness. You can't see a thing in front of you. Bilam was able to fly himself up to the top of the mountains, and then he stood there in the darkness waiting. There are two massive creatures up there, named Shamchazai and Azoyim. Shamchazai and Azoyim are known as the Nephilim. There were two angels who, in the beginning of time, when they saw that man was sinning, when man was coming down to earth and they were sinning, Shamchazai and Azoyim were in Shemayim, and they said to Hashem, Ma enosh kisis grenu? What's the point behind man? All they do is they sin and they do all these terrible things. Why should man stay alive? Forget about man. Let the Malachim rule over the world. Let the Malachim go down to the world. Hashem told them, listen, I know that you Malachim are going to be terrible. If I send you guys down, you're going to be even worse than the people. It's not the people. It's the physicality of the land that pulls them down. Shamchazai and Azoyim said, try us. Come on, we'll do it. We'll be fine. So he sent them down. They were these massive giants. And immediately. Znus, murder. They were over on all types of Avodah Zarah. They did all these crazy things, but mostly Znus. They were really into Znus, and they caused the Mabul to happen. They did Tshuva, and they made it onto the Teva. Both Shemchaza and Azol were able to make it on top of the Teva. However, after the Mabul, there's a whole big thing that Shemchaza was with Ham's wife on the Teva. And once he was with Ham's wife, he impregnated her, and that's where Sichon came from. Sichon came from Shemchaza and Ham's wife. And then later on, there was a whole thing because Ham was only with his wife on the Teva because he knew that Shemchaza was with his wife on the Teva. And because of that, he wanted to make sure that nobody would know that the kid wasn't his. So he got together with his wife in order for them to think that it was going to be his kid. But when the kid was born, it was this massive, massive giant. They're like, Ham, it's not your kid. it's fine. They figured it out. By the way, but Shemchaza and Azol made it through the Teva. And after the Teva, they again started to rebel against the Kadosh Baruch Hu. Shem said, I had enough. That's it. And he chained them up. He took chains on top of them and put the shame of HaKadosh Baruch Hu on top of them. Put them on top of the Hari Choshek, on top of the mountains of pure darkness. And he had two things. Shemchazai had a tremendous punishment because he was the one who was the worst one. He was sent to something called Kafakela, which means he was sent all the way to the end of the universe, like sprung all the way as fast as he can to the end of the universe, and then he falls all the way down to earth as fast as he could until he reaches 3 Tfachim from the ground, and then he pops right back up and he goes all the way back down again. Non-stop. It's a non-stop giant drop from the top of the universe to the bottom of the universe, over and over and over and over again. He keeps going up and down and everything. He only has one eye. Don't worry about that. Either way, Azael is a guy with all eyes. Eyes all over his body. He is hung by his eyelids. Every single one of his eyelids, he's hung on hooks on all of his eyelids and put on top of there, and he's hidden behind his screen so he can't see everything that's going on in the world. But he has so much magic and so many shadim working for him, he still knows basically what's going on. When you go up to the Hari Choshech, Bilam, when he went up there, he waited there in the dark waiting for somebody to see him. Azael saw him somehow and started screaming out loud, the loudest blood-curdling scream you've ever heard. Massive, huge, gigantic, poisonous snakes came out of nowhere and started going up to Bilam in order to go swallow him. But Bilam did not show any fear. He stood his ground, and the snakes eventually went away. Then, a big creature that had the body of a snake with tiny little legs, the head of a cat, and 2 tails, came up to Bilam, and Bilam sacrificed the ashes from a white rooster in front of it, and then he was allowed to go see Shemchaza and Azael. He stayed inside these mountains of Choshech, inside the Hari Choshech, for 50 days. Keneged the 50 days that Bnei Yisrael were on Har Sinai, Bilam had his own 50 days of Matan Torah. He got his own Torah, his Torah of Kishuf and Tuma, and he was taught everything that he needed to know. He needed to have bestiality, which is being with certain types of animals, and that's why he was with his donkey, which the donkey accused him of in this week's Parsha, and he had to do tremendous amounts of other things. He had to sell himself to all the Shadim. And it's terrible for you, because at the end of your life, the Shadim take over your body, and you never have any rest. They take over your neshama and your body, and they destroy you at the very, very end of your life, aside from all the physical things and everything like that. But that's what happened to Bilam at the very end of his life. Bilam went through all this, and he went through everything. Now, that was for 50 days. He was partially blinded from the entire thing, but he later on regretted everything, and he wanted to do tshuva. Why? Because Balak did the entire thing. He had everything that Bilam had through his bird. And he knew, Bilam knew, that nobody was going to be as great as him because he could fly and nobody else was able to know how to fly. But still, Balak was catching up to him. And Balak was getting there slowly but surely. He was getting up there. He didn't want anyone to be equal to him. So instead, you know what he did? He wanted to do tshuva. He said to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, okay, I'll do tshuva. I'll forget about all the magic. Give me a power that no one else in the world will ever have. And he did tshuva, and he stayed away from all magics. All magics. Thus, when the Sarei Balak go up to Bilam, and they say, they have Ksamim Biyadam. They have the magics inside their hand. Bilam told them, I can't go with you guys. I'm not going to go with you guys. Because he didn't want to have anything to do with magic anymore. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave him the bracha. From then on, he was going to has the power of cursing. Anything he said was going to come true. He's going to be able to curse anyone at any time and be able to make people go down and destroy people. He was going to have that power, and no one else in the world was going to have that power. He was going to have the ultimate power of cursing, of aura, of pure, pure aura, and take care of everything. Now listen to what happened over here. Again, this is the craziest thing in the world. Balak saw through his magic that Bnei Yisrael were coming toward him. But you know what he was afraid of? He wasn't afraid of Bnei Yisrael killing him. They weren't allowed to kill Moab. He wasn't afraid of Bnei Yisrael taking away their land. They weren't allowed to take their land. Not until the times of Mashiach. You know what he was afraid of? What came from Moab later on? Rus. He was afraid of Rus being taken right now. Thus, have you ever seen in the Gemara, Rabbi Yochanan looked at them and turned them into a gal shalat samos, a pile of bones? You ever seen in the Gemara, Rabbi Yochanan looked at the guys and turned them into a gal shalat samos, turned them into a pile of bones? Whenever it says gal shalat samos, says the Ben Ishchai, the Pshat behind that is that when a Talmud Chacham looks at a person, takes away his sparks of Kedusha, all the nitzotzos HaKedusha from him, if they take out the Kedusha from somebody, then the guy just becomes a pile of bones. There's nothing left. He might as well not be living anymore. He just dies because there's no reason for him to be there anymore. Thus, when they were done with Paro, Moshe Rabbeinu pulled out all the Kedusha of Paro, he turned Mitzrayim into a pile of bones. He destroyed everything in Mitzrayim because all the Kedusha was taken out of Mitzrayim and everybody just sat there and died. Everybody just died. There was nothing left. The northern kingdom was destroyed and the southern kingdom had to come up and take over all of Egypt. By the way, no, what happened was, what Balak was afraid of is that Bnei Yisrael, not that they were going to take anything, not that they were going to steal any food, nothing like that. What he was afraid of is that all the people, all of Bnei Yisrael, were going to come inside Moab and steal the Nitzotzos HaKedusha. They were going to look at the people, take away their Kedusha, and try to grab Rus now. And get Rus now. And thus get the Kedusha to bring about the Mashiach as soon as possible. That's what he was worried about. So he said, how am I going to stop them from taking away the Kedusha from me? How can I keep the Kedusha with me and keep them away from me? How can I do that? So he looked inside his bird, and the bird worked like the Urim Vitumim. It showed him letters, and you have to put the letters together. And he saw the letters, Kuf, Beis, He. Kuf, Beis, He. And he looked at it, and he thought it said, Kava. Kava means to curse. So that's why he sent to Bilam, because he couldn't curse anyone. Bilam can curse everyone. So he sent to Bilam and said, Bilam, this is what I got to do. And he sent him the Ksum and Beelam. He told him exactly why he has to do this. And he said, the only way for me to destroy Bnei Yisrael is through Kava, is by cursing. But he wanted to test Bilam out. So he sent him the word Ara. He said the word Ara before him. The first time he sent anything, he said the word Ara, which is another type of curse, but a different type. Bilam said, I can't do an Ara. Nobody can do an Ara, not while HaKadosh Baruch Hu is with them. Then he said, what about Kava? The second time he sent him a message, he said, what about the word Kava? Can I curse them with Kava? To that, Bilam said, oh, that's different. And when he asked Hashem that night, Hashem couldn't say no, because Kava was written inside his Urim Mitumim of Tuma. So Hashem said, you can go, but that's not what it means. Kava is not the word that I'm looking for over here. It's not Kava. You messed up that word. So Bilam went, and what ended up happening, as we know, he tried cursing three times, messed up, and he gave them three brachas. One of them is Matovu Alecha Yaakov. We know all that, and that happened, right? All of a sudden, it hit Bilam like a pile of bricks. It hit him all of a sudden. He said, Balak, you stupid idiot. You saw the word, the letters, Kuf, Beis, He, and you thought it meant Kava. You thought it meant curse, right? That's not what it means. It means the word Kuba. Kuf, Beis, He is also the word Kuba. Kuba is a house of ill repute. Send in the Zonos. Send in the prostitutes. Send in all the ill-reputed women. Send them in and make Bnei Yisrael be over on Znus. You won't be able to get them if you try cursing them. I tried doing it three times. It didn't work. Kava is not going to work. Send in the Kuba. And that's when the whole thing was set up. The Shuk was set up, and they set up all the Shuk. And everybody knows this, where the old woman were on the outside and the young woman were on the inside. And by the way, Ramatis Yael Solomon says that that's exactly like the internet. The internet on the outside is like all good, and you get great deals and everything, you know, and you can go on eBay and you can get whatever you want, but then you go a little bit further and all of a sudden the young women are there. Oh, I just meant to go see this site, but I ended up getting that site. You're saying? That's what it's like. The internet was supposed to be a quarter of Matthew Joe Solomon. It's exactly like what Moab had. By the way, this is just editorial on the side. Either way, the Kuba, it was a Kuba Shelznus, and they sent out the woman on the inside and the woman on the inside. were beautiful women, and they had perfume, and they fed them food and gave them drinks, and they ended up getting them drunk and made them worship Avodah Zarah, Baal Peor, and made them do all these things, and by that they were over on Znus, and therefore he destroyed all of Klal Yisrael. The Kedusha of Klal Yisrael went down. 24,000 people from Shimon died. According to one Medrash, 137,000 people from Bnei Yisrael died, all men, until Zimri got up, and as we all know, until Zimri got up and did his thing, and Pinchas went ahead and killed them. Now, the whole thing, Bilam figured out it wasn't Kava, it's Kuba, and that's the connection between the whole Parsha. That's why we go into that whole thing at the end of this week's Parsha, because Bilam finally realized at the end, it's not Kava, it's not curse, we messed this whole thing up, it's Kuba, send in the Zonos and we'll destroy all of Klal Yisrael. And Zimri was mamish fooled. Zimri. You know how old he was? Take a guess how old he was. Take a guess. Take a guess. Come on. 78? That's nothing. Come on. He's 165 years old, Zimri. He pulls Cusby by her hair and drags her to Moshe Rabbeinu. Now, if you're trying to pick up a girl, I'm going to suggest not to pull her by the hair and drag her to the leader of Klal Yisrael. Be like, is this woman mutter or usser? Is that mutter or usser? He's like a caveman, you know? He's got his club in one hand, the woman's hair in the other, dragging her over to Moshe Rabbeinu. He says, is this mutter or usser? What was he asking? What do you think Moshe Rabbeinu is going to say? And Moshe Rabbeinu is silent. Doesn't know what to say. How can you forget? Yes, it's usser. Yes, it's usser. Of course it's usser. What's the question? Pinchas is the only guy who gets up there and be like, wait, Moshe Rabbeinu, isn't this usser? Moshe's like, oh, you're right. Go kill him. I can't do it. You go ahead and kill him. What's going on here? All of a sudden, everybody's sitting there and just like, jeez, I don't know what's going on here. Maybe she is mother. Of course she's usher. There's no way. Can you imagine if that would happen nowadays? It doesn't make any sense. And he's 165 years old. Guys, he's old. He's like an old, wrinkly prune that's like sitting there and grabbing this girl. What was he thinking? And he's a nussy in Klal Yisrael. What? There's a whole Ksam Sofer that explains it. He said it's a Pella. He was 165 years old and he does this Maisa, Sarachi and Gavel, he says. He's the Nasi of Klal Yisrael and everything. He's a Nasi. What's he thinking? How could he have done this thing? He's Shlumiel ben Tsuri Shadoi. Listen to his name. Shlumiel. Shalem Kel Tsuri Shadoi. How many names of gods do you need in your name? How many names do you need? This guy has everything in him. What else do you need? It's crazy. His pshat was, he knew that Rus came from Moab. He saw that Cusby was a very holy neshama. Cusby happened to be the neshama of Dina. And he thought, this is the neshama of Rus. And Moab is here. We can pull in, and he said to Moshe Rabbeinu, we can pull in all the nitzot sakidosha right now. Exactly what Balak was trying for, he knew we could do it right now. We could grab all those nitzot right now. What? She was a Moabite. She was the there's a whole thing if she was Balak's daughter. It's a whole true. But either way, this person had the nitzotzos, the kedusha that all Bnei Yisrael needed. She might be Rus. Said Zimri, let me take her. Is it mutter or usher for me to be with her? He dragged her. He had no respect for her. It wasn't a question of respect. He knew that Mashiach could possibly come from this relationship. So he went to Moshe Rabbeinu and he said, should I do this or should I not do this? Moshe Rabbeinu said, I don't know. I can see that something wrong is going on. All of Bnei Shimon are falling prey to the woman of Moab. But I do see that this is a very holy neshama. Maybe this is the whole purpose of this whole thing was to bring about Rus and to bring about Rus right now. Said Pinchas, absolutely not. There's too much tuma going on here. Too many crazy things going on here. I'm telling you, it can't be that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to allow Rus to come in right now. It'll never, ever happen. There's too much tuma, too many people doing Znus. It's not going to happen. Something's wrong. Something is very, very wrong. So Moshe Rabbeinu said, look, I can't tell you whether you're right or wrong. You go ahead and try to kill him. You're the one who says that he's wrong. You paskin that he's wrong. You go ahead and try to kill him. If a miracle happens and you're able to get by all the people of Shimon who are surrounding his tent with spears, you're able to get inside, take your spear, and kill Zimri, if a crazy miracle happens and that happens, then I'll agree. And then I'll say, you're right. You're 100% right. It was wrong. But until then, look, maybe this is is Rus. How do I know? It's all for the Nitzos HaKadosh. She was trying to do something disgusting. You're right. She was trying to do something disgusting, so he did it. But either way, said Pinchas went ahead and did it. Crazy miracles happened. And that's next week is Shavuos B'Tammuz. I don't know what we're going to do for that. But there's 10 miracles. You think there's just 10? At least 18 miracles. Crazy miracles that happened right at that moment when Pinchas picked her up, picked them all up with the spear and everything. He got by all the people of Shimon to get inside the tent where Zimri was. You think Zimri was sitting by himself and like everybody's all running around and Pinchas just knocked on the door. Hey, Zimri, you home? And like goes inside and spears them? You don't think the Nasi is going to have bodyguards? Of course there's going to be people around there. He gets around everyone, is able to get inside and kill both of them and does crazy miracles with all of them. Hold on. The point is that they were right in a way, but it wasn't time. And Balak did it. Kuba worked. And the Kuba worked that Rus was stuck in Moab for 410 years. Rus did not come out from Moab for 410 years. That's when she was able to come back. And it mamish worked. The thing that Balak saw in his magic, mamish worked. It worked perfectly. And they weren't able to take out the Nitzotz HaKadosh, and everything worked out the exact way that they wanted to. Okay, guys, there's a lot more, but that's about it for now. We're going to stop with that for now. Have a good Shabbos, and next week I will try Shavuos B'Tammuz. The fast is over at like 9:05, so I don't know if we're going to have anything, but we'll see. Maybe we'll make something late if anybody wants, like 12-ish or whatever it is. See how it goes. Not much. How are you, man?
That's funny.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. How long are you in for?
A month?
Wow. That's good to have you here. Good to see you around. Hopefully we'll see you around a lot. With Gabi. Gabi's been really, really excited by the way. Wait, it's Friday. I can't play anymore. Yeah, I can play Sunday.
Sunday?
I don't know. I guess we'll find out.
Fine.
Yeah. What's up? So I keep forgetting what it is.
Because Nosei
is a carrier, right? And the Hiza, I said Hiza is a sprinkler, right? I translated it into Hiza. Yeah, you're right. Because I just did the Gemara Yuma, and I saw Hiza because there's two opinions over there. Yeah, I just totally forgot. Oh.